I have a confession to make. You see me standing here having succumbed to peer pressure. I was going to come today in my acid wash jeans, my El Yucco t-shirt. I was going to spike my hair with mousse, paint it hot pink with a spray dye and chew gum. I chickened out because you people put peer pressure onto me, and you see me standing before you dressed in the way that ladies' house party speakers are supposed to. But I'm not wearing a Fletcher Jones skirt, so I'm okay. Peer pressure. What is it? Peer pressure is when someone close to you in age influences the things that you do, the values that you believe, the things that you say. Now, most of the time when we think about peer pressure, we think about negative peer pressure. That's a sort of peer pressure that's harmful, or peer pressure that can be potentially harmful. But not all peer pressure is like that. Some peer pressure can be very, very positive. Now, positive peer pressure is a sort of pressure that encourages people to behave in a positive way or in a good way. Let me give you an example. I was very fortunate last year to be able to go and teach in Canada. And while I was there, a lot of the students that I teach or that I taught in 1986 used to write to me. And most of the students that I had had in year 12 had gone off to university. One girl in particular was always disorganized when I taught her. Her notes were absolutely everywhere. She never had things in on time. She was just the worst organized student I had taught. She writes a letter to me. "Miss, you'd be very pleased about me now. I'm in with this group who are really eager to succeed. And we don't go to all the parties around because we're all working very hard. All my notes are organized. I get things in on time because the group of people that I'm with basically helps me do that." Now, that's an example of positive peer pressure at work. Another example, in year 12 this year at our school, I teach at Pennant Hills High School. When this year's year 12 was in year 7, there was a group of approximately 15 young Christian boys who came up from a year 6, I think it was Beecroft Primary. They came to Pennant Hills High School, and those 15 boys became involved immediately into ISCF, that's Inter-School Christian Fellowship. Those boys changed the face of that form. They have influenced so many of the young people in that form for the Lord, that it's incredible watching this form go through with positive peer pressure there. They're teaching the other members in their form what it's like to be a Christian. They're encouraging each other, and it's a really positive aspect. So don't think about peer pressure just as negative things. It can be positive things. But positive peer pressure is the least used type of pressure, and it strengthens those who use it. It's can give others the courage to stand up for what they believe is right, and it can strengthen the people who are using it as well as those around. Don't forget that it's there. I'm going to talk mainly about negative peer pressure, but keep in mind that it doesn't all have to be a negative thing. Why is there something like peer pressure? And why is it particularly prevalent when kids are heading into adolescence? Well, I believe that it's because at that time of life, there are so many physical, emotional, social changes in their life that everything around them is changing, and they're really searching for some sort of identity. What happens is that, and she flicks basically through here, as all these things are changing around them, it becomes very scary because they're changing. It becomes very, very scary to be different. And so things like this happen. They're all eager to be different, but in the same way. You see, conformity is a very safe way of behaving. With everything else around you changing, then if you conform to at least something, then you're safe and you don't have to worry about that particular area of your life. The conformity means that the problems you're facing everywhere else are not going to be made any more difficult. If you stand out in the crowd, then life is going to get even more difficult. I wear glasses. A lot of times at school, kids come with notes from their parents. G, Jimmy is supposed to wear glasses in school. Would you please make sure that he wears them? Or it might be Jane or whoever. The kid knows that they've got poor eyesight. The teacher knows they've got poor eyesight. Everybody else knows they've got poor eyesight and they need to wear their glasses. But the minute they stick their glasses on, they're different. They don't want to look any different. They want to conform to everyone else. If everybody wore glasses, they would too. But because not everybody does, they don't want to. They don't want to be different. It's a frightening thing not to conform. So if you're having hassles with your kid wearing glasses at school or needing to wear them and isn't doing it, consider things from their point of view and be sensitive in the way that you handle it, because it's a way of showing that they're different, and that can be quite a frightening thing for them. But conformity is not just a problem amongst adolescents, witness me. It becomes particular concern because of all these changes and because the spheres of influence in their lives are changing. Think about the influences on an adolescent in terms of three circles. There you go. And in the centre of those three circles, when they're young children, the family is the most important. So before they're adolescents, the family is the group of people that they basically take their values, their identity, and all of that sort of thing. Then the next sphere of influence turns out to be their close friends and their relations. Then outside of that, people who have less influence are their distant relatives, school associates, groups, clubs like Girl Guides, Brownies, Boy Scouts, things like that, Girls Rally, Boys Rally. And then out of that is the community. But what happens during adolescence is that the inner two circles change. So no longer is the family the most important group for the adolescent. It's now the close friends are the most important, and the family gets shifted out into the next sphere of influence. If they find identity with their close friends, then it doesn't matter that they have identity with their other associates. So that's what's happening in their lives. There's a shift in the way in which they're viewing themselves because of all of the physical, social, emotional changes. Be aware of that. It's probably why your adolescent doesn't do what you ask them to do anymore, because you're not that important anymore. Their close friends are much more important to them, and the views of their close friends are much more important as well. Now, as they're undergoing all these physical changes, their self-confidence gets shot to pieces and they start to feel inferior. And that's why these close friends start to have a lot more influence on a lot of different things. For example, their friends, more than you, are going to influence what they think about themselves, the sort of language they should use, what they should think about you as parents, what they should think about teachers, what they should think about authority, whether or not they should smoke, drink, take drugs, have sex, what's right, what's wrong, what's in and what's out. And don't ever be seen wearing what's out when it's not in anymore. How to behave in certain situations, what party to attend, what friends to choose. The list seems to be absolutely endless. All of these things are going to be much more influenced by their friends than by you. And because of these two spheres of influence changing, if you haven't developed a good relationship with your adolescent before adolescence, then anything that you are likely to say to them about those issues is likely to be taken as criticism, and it's going to be very difficult to be able to present your opinion and to present your information to them in a way that will be acceptable, because it will seem to be conflict that you're presenting them with rather than any support. With everything that's changing, the pressure to conform becomes even greater, because non-conformity multiplies all those problems. The great desire for acceptance means that behaviour is governed by this safety syndrome. Behave in the safest possible way and everything's cool. All of those sorts of reactions are the results of feelings of inferiority and low self-esteem. So, where should we begin? Well, I'm sorry to say that by the time adolescence is reached, it's almost too late. Now, I'm sorry, that's the way it is. The groundwork has to be covered before the adolescent reaches adolescence. Now, what does that mean? For girls, before they reach about 12, Now, some girls are maturing much earlier these days, around about 10, 11, so you should be considering talking to your 8-year-old about these issues and continue it on right through until you know they've reached adolescence. For boys, it tends to be a little bit older, 13, 14. For some boys earlier, for some boys later, of course, but you need to think about these sorts of things before they reach adolescence. The groundwork has to be covered then, because as I said, later on anything that you say is going to be taken as criticism, and because those spheres of influences have changed, they're not going to accept what you say in the way that you would expect them to anymore. Perhaps the single most important step in training your adolescent or your child to handle peer pressure is to give them a sense of belonging. That's the thing that they're desperately seeking through adolescence. With all the changes, they need something secure, something that stays the same, a sense of belonging that's going to be there, hold them right through everything that's changing. Teaching them that they're important, that their views and opinions will be respected even if you think they're wrong, that they belong, that they're loved, no matter what they do, that you'll be there for them. All of those things help build a family identity, that sense of belonging, the sense of being an important person within your family group. It helps give them security, self-worth and self-esteem, and that's what they need when they reach adolescence. Now, it's not just to parents this is so important. Many Christian young people find that security and that importance in their families, but they don't find it at all in the church. And the church is supposed to give that sense of security as well. The church sometimes is very unaccepting of the young person. In fact, very unaccepting of the child. I'm sure that you've all seen it happen in your church, and I know that I've done it myself, and I'm sure that if you look back, you've probably done the same sort of thing. What I'm talking about is ostracising a young child because you don't particularly agree with the way the parents are bringing them up. Now, I've seen it happen so many times, and I've been guilty of it too, that either the child isn't dressed in the way that I would dress them, or they don't behave in the same way that I would think they should behave. And so to show my disapproval to parents, I don't have much to do with the kid. Immediately, the kid is the one that's being influenced. They're the person that's getting the brunt of your disapproval, whether or not your disapproval is right or wrong, sort of takes some consideration anyway. And these children are being rejected by the group that is supposed to be holding them, loving them, caring them, supporting them, giving them a sense of identity, showing them that no matter what happens, we are there to support and hold them, giving them the self-esteem, the self-worth that they so desperately need. We're doing so much damage when we do that sort of thing. Let's be aware of it. Let's work with the young people in our churches, the children in our churches. Help build that self-esteem as a community so that they've got the self-worth within our group. That way, by the time adolescence comes and they're searching for a group identity, they don't need to find it in so-called bad friends, because they already have that sense of security and self-worth within us as a church group. And they know that we care, they know they're important, they don't need to be made felt important or accepted in any other group. If we're committed to each other in church families and provide them with the identity, it'll be there when they need it. Not only do we need to develop the sense of belonging in the children, but we need to prepare them for adolescence before it comes. In particular, the whole issue of peer pressure needs to be discussed with your young child. It has to be brought out into the open so that children are taught how to cope before they have to cope. Now, just on that, let me recommend to you a few books. She dashes into a nearby corner. Anything that you can read by James Dobson is terrific. This particular book is written for teens. I think it's recommended for about 8 years old and up. I recommend that before you give it to your pre-adolescent, that you read it yourself. It's a frank explanation of the things that are going to happen to them physically, spiritually, emotionally, and how they can cope with it. It's called Preparing for Adolescence by James Dobson. It's really terrific stuff. Another one that I found very helpful is called Peer Pressure, Making It Work for You by Chris Lute. It's also very good. It's like a workbook journal for kids who are having difficulty with peer pressure, helping them see what they can do to overcome it and how they can change negative peer pressure into positive peer pressure. Getting confused on peer pressure. Try saying that really quickly. This book too is really good for discussion things with teens, particularly the section on peer pressure. It's called the Discussion Manual for Student Relationships. It's put out by Moody Press, and it's also very handy. If you want to have a look at them later on, feel free to ask me about them. We don't have them here in the bookshop, but they will order them for you if you're interested in buying them. Discuss these issues with your pre-adolescent. Bring things out into the open, build the relationship so that they know how to cope before they have to. It's very, very important. Okay, so what can we do? Let's have a look first of all on a Christian perspective on peer pressure, just to see what God says about the whole issue. First of all, a non-Christian way of thinking and acting is against God's will and it just won't work. That's one of the things we need to teach our pre-adolescents. Let me read you a verse from the J.B. Phillips. It's Romans 12 verse 2. We often hear it read in other versions, but I think J.B. Phillips is really good. Don't let the world around you squeeze you into its own mould, but let God remake you so that your whole attitude of mind is changed. Thus you will prove in practice that the will of God is good, acceptable to him and perfect. So, first of all, show them that the non-Christian way is just not going to work for them. Second thing, we should teach them that as Christians, we should be prepared to be misunderstood, disliked, hated by other people around us. We shouldn't think that that is something that is odd or something that is completely strange to one particular person. Not only teach them that we should be prepared to be misunderstood, but that we should even be happy when we are. We should be happy when others reject us, and that's probably what's going to happen if they stand up for Christian values within their peer groups. 2 Timothy 3:12, persecution is inevitable for those who are determined to live really Christian lives. John 15:19, because you do not belong to the world and I have chosen you out of it, the world will hate you. John 3:20. Everybody who does wrong hates the light and keeps away from it for fear his deeds may be exposed. So if they're in a group and they're standing up for the things that are right, the people that are going to be wanting to do the things that are wrong are going to hate them. That's basically what the verse tells us. So they should be prepared to accept that. Matthew 5:10-12. Happy are those who have suffered persecution for the cause of goodness, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. And what happiness will be yours when people blame you and ill-treat you and say all kinds of slanderous things against you for my sake. Be glad then, tremendously glad, for your reward in heaven is magnificent. Do we teach that to our young kids when they're facing rejection from friends at school? The third thing on God's perspective is to see man from God's point of view. Psalm 146 tells us that man is small and weak in God's eyes. Man covers a short span. God covers eternity. His views are so much more important than the views of people who are only here just for a breath in time. Matthew 9 verse 36 tells us that we should see mankind with compassion and love, not fear and awe. So don't get too upset about things. Because if we teach things, if we look at them with compassion rather than with fear, our whole perspective on what's happening will change. James 4:14 and Psalm 37 also says that mankind is temporary and God is eternal, so choose his way. That's how God sees peer pressure. That's the Christian perspective. Teach that sort of thing to your pre-adolescent, to help them understand what's going to happen to them if they want to follow God in their lives at school. So, how does this all work in practice? It's all very well knowing how you should see something. It's a little different about trying to put the thing in practice. The first thing they need to know is to recognise when negative peer pressure is going to happen. So, know when it's happening, know what it is, and know how it's going to happen. Let me give you some examples. First of all, in the know what is the sort of thing that's going to happen, get them to recognise phrases like this. Don't be such a... You know the word? We won't get into... Everybody. I thought you were my... Get them to recognise those patterns. If they recognise the patterns, they know negative peer pressure is going to come. Also, get them to recognise how it's going to come. Usually the situation is unnatural, it's secretive, it's suspicious, the tone of voice is going to be different. If they recognise what's going to be said and how it's going to be said, they can see those cues for negative peer pressure and be ready to act upon it. And it won't come as a final question where they have to suddenly find an answer. Be prepared for it before it comes. And the second thing is to make a logical decision. Okay, now often situations that start to arise become very emotionally charged and it's very hard to make a logical decision. So if they know that it's coming by how it's said and by what's said, then they've got a much better chance at the second stage. Think of both sides of the issue, whatever's being asked. Take your time in making a decision. Be true to your own values. Don't do anything that you're going to regret later on. And don't let your emotions cloud the issue. So if they make a logical decision on what's happening, it's not going to be a spur of the moment thing that's going to destroy them later on. The next thing is to say no nicely. Now often people can say no and make the person who was asked or has put the negative peer pressure onto them can say no in such a way that everything turns into this great big schmuggle and things get worse and worse and worse and worse. Best thing is to teach them how to say no nicely. You don't just have to say no, I think you're doing the wrong thing and that's it. Okay, you have to teach them how to do things tactfully so that when they come to the position where they can exert positive peer pressure, that they won't get a negative response themselves. Decide ahead of time what they're going to do about the situation. Discuss different situations with your pre-adolescent or your adolescent. What are you going to do if someone asks you if you want to go and get drunk? What are you going to do if you're up in the girls' toilets and they say, here, have a cigarette? What are you going to do if they're all going to go off and cuddle in the back seat of the car and get really intimate? What are you going to do about it? Decide ahead of time what you're going to do. It means that when the time comes, the decision isn't going to be that hard to make. Be friendly about things, but firm. If you've made up your mind about what you're going to do, stick with it. The next thing is to be honest about things. Don't try and cover up how you feel about something, but be honest. For example, let me just take an example so that you know the sorts of things I mean. Let's say one of the big things these days, more than drugs anymore, is drinking. Adolescent drinking is just so incredibly prevalent, it's frightening. There are so many teenagers that are just getting so hooked on alcohol that the numbers are just frightening. I would say that in most classes of Year 7 students, that I would say about 60% to 80% have had some sort of experience with heavy drinking. And that gets frightening. It changes, of course, from school to school, area to area. But it's there. Let's say that your teenager is in a situation where they're offered heavy liquor. What do? Well, they could have decided before time that they don't want to be involved in it. They have to be friendly and firm about it, and then just be totally honest. I'm sorry, I don't want to drink. That's saying no nicely. You could present an alternative instead and say, I'm sorry, I don't want to drink. I'd rather have a Diet Coke. Diet Coke is very in. Or you could say, I'm sorry, I don't want to drink. I'd rather have a Diet Coke because there are less calories in Diet Coke. That's quoting a fact. You need to get them the idea that by saying no to what their friends are asking them isn't saying that I hate you. No doesn't mean I hate you and I think you're terrible. You could say, I know you're my friend and that you want me to do this, but I'd rather not. So that you are affirming the fact that the person is still their friend, but still saying, no, the action is not what I want to be involved with. Appealing to laws and rules is another way of being able to say no nicely. We're not allowed to drink, we're underage. That's saying no nicely. Appeal to the consequences. If my mum finds out, she'll kill me. Make an excuse. Let's go and do something else. And the other thing is making a joke. Kids are really good at making a joke. And I'm sure they could think of 101 ways of making a joke to get out of anything you ask them to do. So all of those ways are ways of saying no in a nice way, so that they're not rejecting their friends, but they're still not relenting to that negative peer pressure. But even though they say no nicely, the possibility of them facing rejection from their friends is very, very strong. And their friends still might reject them if they don't want to participate in whatever's happening. I think that one thing that needs to happen in your teaching on peer pressure is to teach them that if they are facing negative peer pressure continually, then maybe they have chosen the wrong group of friends. And the hardest thing is for them to change that group of friends. In fact, probably the best thing to do beforehand is to teach them how to make a good choice of friends. Teach them the qualities of good friendships. Teach them how to distinguish between people who will be good friends and people who won't be good friends. And help them, when they get to the stage of realising that these aren't good friends for me, give them the support and the courage to be able to change their group of friends. Even help them to maybe not have any friends for a few months while that change starts to take place. That's very, very hard. Because if you're in a school with 1,200 students and you don't have any friends, that makes life very, very tough when everything else around you is changing. In conclusion, let's remember that God is not against peer pressure. In fact, God is pro peer pressure. He's against negative peer pressure, but he is very pro positive. He wants us to get the sort of peer pressure from people who are going to help us to do his will, to help us to go his way. If we spend a large portion of our time with the kind of friends who are going to help us become more like Jesus Christ, we'll be much more better equipped to resist the pressure from those who don't know him and who are going to get us off the way. We shouldn't be afraid to reach out to those who need Christ, but we do need the support of our Christian friends. Let me just close with Hebrews 10:24-25. Let us think of one another and how we can encourage each other to love and do good deeds. And let us not hold aloof from our church meetings as some do. Let us do all we can to help one another's faith, and this the more earnestly as we see the final day drawing nearer. They need our help. They need teaching and training about peer pressure before it happens. Let's hope that we'll be better fitted to help them make those decisions when they come.